This is the Oanda Podcast.
You're listening to the Oanda Market Insights Podcast with me, Johnny Hart, where we look at all the business and market news across the world with Oanda senior market analysts all over the globe. And today it is Ed Moyer in New York. Good afternoon from London, Ed. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me, Johnny.
It's a busy old podcast today. Plenty to rattle through. Let's start with the latest breaking news, which has come from your side of the pond. And it's the latest non-farm payroll figures. And growth much stronger than analysts had expected, even stronger than you expected when we spoke this time last week. Employers adding 379,000 jobs in February. That breaks a two-month streak of pretty minimal gains. Certainly hiring surged in the US last month as virus cases dropped, the vaccination campaign gained some steam, and restaurants and bars brought back workers. But nonetheless, better figures than analysts had expected. And how have the markets responded to that?
Well, I think markets are pretty much believing that the economy is improving dramatically. You highlighted the impressive gain we saw in jobs in February, but also remember the prior month was also revised significantly higher too. So I think right now what we're seeing is that there is strong optimism that this economy is ready to roar higher. Remember like last week we were talking about the possible impact of the deep freeze, which really affected several states in the South, and that did not derail these numbers whatsoever. So I think right now you're probably seeing that investors are anticipating that this is going to continue to drive growth prospects, which should in turn continue this bond market sell-off, which should push yields higher, and that's probably going to continue to weigh on stocks and also send the US dollar higher.
It's funny, isn't it? Because on both sides of the Atlantic, when it comes to the USA and the UK, and we'll talk about the UK and specifically the budget in a moment or two, but things have gone much better than expected. Forecasts have been revised up for both the United States and the UK. Not so much in Europe, of course, and some of the other parts of the world. But it just shows you, because of a strong vaccination program in both of these two countries, the UK and the USA, it's made an almighty difference, hasn't it, to the positivity and the optimism around, and that has affected markets.
Very much so. And one of the I think the big takeaways too is over in Europe, the virus variants really kind of provided a little bit of a disruption in the reopening of the economy. And in the US right now, we're starting to see the B.1.17 work its way through, and it really cases have steadily declined. So there's not been another hit because of the virus variant. But I think right now, all the health experts are saying, you know, we won't know for sure until the middle of or the end of March. So I think right now, the U.S. economy has really benefited from just a strong shift in as far as how the pandemic has unfolded here. And right now, cases continue to drop. We've seen 20% declines. Now it's somewhat slowing down, but there's still this tremendous upside belief that we are going to have more states reopen. Texas already announced they're going to completely reopen on Wednesday. Mississippi's following them. And the pressure is going to grow to reopen the economy. And I think what you're starting to see is a lot of the seniors, the older population that was first to get the vaccines, they're ready to travel. Senior citizens are looking to book tickets. They want to visit family members across the country or go on mini vacations. And the millennials, the young working public is really tired of this pandemic. And they're, I mean, if you follow my social media feed, some of my younger friends, they've not really slowed down. They've continued with life. And I think you're going to see there's going to be more excitement that there's going to be much more economic activity as we get to the warmer months. And then that's really just driving this growth outlook in the U.S. But there's still some risks. But I think right now there's so much optimism. You know, the U.S. is on the verge of getting another massive $1 trillion stimulus bill. And the Biden administration's already got the ball going for infrastructure spending. And I think there's going to be a tough debate as far as how to get that pushed through, but I think Republicans are going to be on board for that if it helps their regions, and I think Democrats have a strong chance of being able to get this last stimulus relief bill passed through this weekend and possibly get infrastructure spending set up to possibly happen around the summertime. What you're probably going to see, though, is that the success of the economy that we've seen in these recent months is going to raise calls for, well, do we really need all this stimulus? Is the Fed being overly dovish here, and are they really kind of not having a realistic view as far as when they should start to tighten and have that taper tantrum? And I think, you know, the bond market is going to test them. And right now, the Fed is starting to lose control at both ends of the curve. And I think that you're going to see that their job is going to be a lot more complicated in these next couple of months. And right now, if the move in treasuries continues, and if we see the 10-year yield trading above 170, that is going to start to weigh on the economic recovery. That's going to tighten conditions. And I think you're going to see that the Fed's going to be forced to do more. And what probably they'll end up having to consider is Operation Twist or some type of adjustment in their purchases. But I think you're going to probably see that the Fed is going to remain steady. They're willing to tolerate higher yields. They just don't want it to happen immediately. And I think that right now, everyone is on edge because we're not going to hear from Powell until the Fed March 17th meeting. So there's several trading sessions that we're going to have to go through during that blackout period where the rise in yields could really accelerate. And if that happens, you're probably going to see a much stronger U.S. dollar, which, you know, was not the consensus trade at all at the beginning of the year.
Be interesting to see if the numbers of people out and about and, as you said, going on vacations in America will increase the demand for energy and for oil, which is a good segue to the latest from OPEC Plus. We've seen oil rally, oil prices up more than 5%, Brent crude above $67 a barrel. That's near the highest level since January 2020. And that's after OPEC and Russia decided against unleashing a flood of crude onto the market. And Saudi Arabia itself urged fellow oil producers to, quote unquote, keep their powder dry in the face of persistent uncertainty linked to the pandemic. There will be a point, though, of course, where demand for oil rises because things have opened up again. They'll have to make a decision about whether to turn on the taps properly again.
We're going to have a tighter oil market, and that's why prices are just skyrocketing higher. I think that, you know, heading into that OPEC Plus meeting, there was a strong belief. I was one of the people that thought that we were going to see a 500,000 barrel increase for the group, and the Saudis were going to end their 1 million barrel voluntary cut. Well, they refrained from both, and that really surprised markets. I think that the Saudi prince really did an amazing job as far as just kind of taking over and dictating where oil prices are going to go. This move signals that the Saudis, and also you could say the Russians too, are not concerned about U.S. production. I think that if Trump was president and you knew that the shale companies and U.S. energy companies were just going to go and salivate at this opportunity of higher prices and free reign as far as, you know, pumping out more oil, that would really take away market share. The Saudis and Russians now firmly believe, based off of this action, that okay, shale production is going to increase, but it's not going to be anything that's going to take away significant chunks of their market share. And this means that you're going to probably have the benefit of higher prices, and that's going to kind of overcompensate for some shortfalls that you're kind of holding back increasing your production. I think you're going to see that there's going to be a super cycle here for some commodities, and right now, oil is probably going to be one of them, because what we're seeing too is this demand pickup. We don't know exactly how it's going to unfold, but especially in the U.S., these shale wells, they're going to run dry fairly soon. And it is not as easy to ramp up production. So just because you have the demand, it's not like you could flip a switch and have everything kind of work as nicely as you want it to be. So I think right now, oversupply concerns, and that's gone out the window. And right now there's still, I think, some potential upside here that you're gonna start to see that if the demand situation really picks up globally, there's just not enough crude out there, and that's going to really drive prices much higher.
Very interesting, and just shows how quickly things can change when we were but a few months ago talking about the incredible idea of negative oil prices. I mean, that was, what, 6 months ago? I mean, how far could they go?
I think that right now, for Brent, I think that I wouldn't blink if I saw $80 later this year. I think that there are, I think, some factors that will kind of eventually slow down that move higher. I think you're eventually, once probably closer to the summer months, when everyone is trying to secure their market share, you'll start to see that, okay, the supply is coming back a little bit faster than what the Saudis would want. But for the most part, we are going to see higher prices. I think there's no doubt as far as that goes, as with respect to the way this recovery, global economic recovery, is unfolding. Unless there's some unforeseen event, I think that it's safe to believe that the fundamentals are lining up on the demand side and also on the supply side. So I think that if we have some geopolitical risks that just come on top of this move, no, you could easily see that there could be a reason where we have prices surge higher. But I think $80 for Brent is something that is not too outlandish. But $100 would be, there's still work for that to happen. And right now, I think the 80 to 85 would probably be the upper boundaries of where I see Brent going this year.
Okay, let's go to China. And China apparently now aiming for an economic growth rate above 6% this year after scrapping its target last year. This came from China today at the opening of this year's National People's Congress. And that target marks a return to strong growth after the pandemic. Certainly made a huge impact on the world's second largest economy. Is that significant, that target?
Well, it's a modest growth target, and it does signal that they're kind of shifting their policy from the world. I think they're focused on their domestic economy, and I think their commitment to growing their technology space, I think, shows that China is they're committed to becoming the dominant leader in the world. And I think that there's a lot of optimism that China, their economy is going to continue to thrive. And I think that you're probably going to see the political risks, I think, with everything that's happening in Hong Kong. We'll see exactly how the Europeans and Americans agree in working with China. But I think right now, investors, though, everyone wants to have some exposure to China. I think they're going to lead eventually in innovation, and that's why you're seeing many investors become fixated on that. And I think right now you're probably seeing that China has been doing very well due to their handling of the virus. And I think you're probably going to anticipate that more investors are just going to remain fixated on China.
Okay, Ed, I think it's only fair we do cross the world and cross the Atlantic and talk about the UK for a minute or two, because we did have a big moment this week on Wednesday, of course. A big day for the Chancellor, Rishi Sunak, his second budget, and, the eyes of the country were on that, in this sort of pandemic period where we're hoping to get out of it, and what he was going to do, where he was going to make the tax increases and support the workers and those in need during these last few months of the pandemic. And well, it's gone down pretty well, actually, with both the markets and the electorate. And I saw a poll actually this morning, I think in the Times. Amazing. The Conservative Party now 13 points ahead of the Labour Party opposition following that budget. Chancellor Rishi Sunak, certainly, you know, the second most popular politician, and Boris Johnson isn't doing too badly either. Looking at the numbers, plenty to talk about. He may be forced to impose further tax rises on British households to address what are, for some, implausible public spending plans. In the traditional post-budget briefings, a wide range of economists from the Institute for Fiscal Studies, the Resolution Foundation, the Office for Budget Responsibility questioned whether the Chancellor's public spending totals were adequate or not. But it seems to have gone down much better than many people had expected.
Definitely. I think the budget was well-received. And I think investors were kind of anticipating the extension of support to the economy. Prolonging the job furlough program was a given. And the inevitable tax increases, I mean, that goes without saying for everyone. I think that I think the UK economy is getting the support it needs. And right now, investors, when you look across Europe, you know, the UK is the preferred investment choice. I think, you know, when you take a look at today's weakness, I think that you could see that the FTSE 100 is down the least. And I think right now there's just this belief that, you know, you're going to see the UK really, I think, have a much brighter outlook because they're finally moving beyond Brexit. They're finally they've done an amazing job as far as getting their economy going with this pandemic, and I think that the vaccine success is really leading that. And there's just, I think, countless optimism that, you know, you're going to see the economy just continue to rebound stronger as, you know, each month goes by, as we get more people vaccinated. So there's a lot of optimism that, you know, the corporate tax rate increase, you know, in 2023, that's a little disappointing. I mean, you know, you're not going to see the UK become the Singapore type.
Well, no, solution. Not with that, because of course that really was the big surprise, wasn't it? The corporation tax at 25%, which, by the way, only really affects the big companies. Any of the SMEs who make a profit of 50,000 or less wouldn't be touched by any corporation tax in the next few years. But 25%. Within, what, 2 or 3 years is quite a sizable difference, isn't it? If we are in this country hoping to attract business from outside into this country, that ain't going to do it.
No, it's not. And I think that would be the one big negative takeaway that I think you have from that. That's, you know, post-Brexit, you know, you could have made the case that this is where you could have really changed the outlook as far as incentivizing business to come there. So I think that that's kind of the one big negative that I would take from Sunak's budget proposal here. But there's still, I think, tremendous upside here for the UK economy. But overall, you're probably going to see that, for instance, the British pound right now, it seems like that's really going to just take its cues from the US dollar right now, the dollar, not to be the American on this one, but the dollar right now is dictating everything in the short term. But I think overall, once this move in bond yields kind of stabilizes, you should probably still see UK assets outperform.
Yes, indeed. And I was just checking the latest numbers as far as the pound against the dollar is concerned, and the 1.38 or thereabouts. So it was doing very well, sterling against the dollar, up to about 1.40, wasn't it, a few days ago. But it's lost some ground. And as you said, the US dollar is in charge. Okay, let's preview next week, of course. Are we going to have as busy a week? What's the highlights for you?
Next week is an interesting week. We have, I'll start with the U.S. We have, I think what's really going to be the focus for me initially is going to be the reopening of other states. I think Texas starts on Wednesday. You're going to see calls for other states to kind of move forward with reopening their economies. That's really going to dictate exactly, you know, how strong this this recovery is in the first quarter. And I think what you're probably going to see is that the market is going to remain fixated with bonds. The inflation data that we'll get from the U.S. is going to be key. I think that you're probably going to see that there is going to be some price pressures that are starting to make their way. And I think the headline CPI is supposed to go to 1.7%. But if things start to run hotter now, the Fed has telegraphed that they're expecting it. But if we start to see things really skyrocket, that could force the Fed's hand in doing more. And I think the markets will be all over that. With respect to the European outlook, I think you're going to see that. I think in the UK, I think Monday, you begin to ease your lockdowns. I know many friends, current company included, enjoying the reopening of England, and I think that is very positive.
Yes, I'm calling it Parents' Independence Day because my kids have been off school for 3 months now, and I don't know about them, but it's certainly taken its toll on us. And there are many, many very relieved parents on Monday. It's almost like the light at the end of the tunnel really has suddenly emerged. And it's come as a great relief. And that will have an effect on people generally in terms of their spending, their optimism, their workflow, their productivity, because it has been. I don't wish to complain too much because, some people are in a worse position than many. But, having to work and homeschool and deal with all the repercussions from that has been difficult for, millions of families in this country, and I'm sure the rest of the world as well.
No, very, very much so. And I think, the focus right now is everyone is just trying to get a sense of, what's the baseline for the economy. And I think you're going to see a lot of people will focus too also on the German industrial production data that we'll get. There's going to be, a lot of focus also on Governor Bailey's comments on Monday, just updating where they are on with the economic outlook. And then I think the main event though for Europe is going to be the ECB rate decision. I mean, obviously, there's no change expected with the deposit facility rate or the refinancing rate, but you're going to start to see the ECB emphasize, their goal to maintain favorable financing conditions. I think that you're going to get a clear message that, higher bond yields are triggering an unwarranted tightening of conditions. So I think you're going to see that the ECB is going to really unlike the Fed, they're going to voice their concerns over the bond market rally. I think that's going to be another thing that you're going to probably see, that they're going to have to update their economic, projections. And I think that right now the outlook, has taken a little bit of a hit, I think, for Europe. So I think that there's going to be a little bit of caution there. That's the one of the key events, I think, for Europe. And then on Friday, UK GDP, that's always an important one as well. So I think that's we're gonna see the impact as far as the lockdowns and how the economy is going to be after that. So there's a lot to follow. I think that everyone is going to really though be fixated on the bond market. Where does the dollar go? And the oil prices, how high can this go? Eventually oil prices will have that impact on inflation. And so there's the situation is never changing, but it'll be quiet from the Fed because the Fed's rate decision is the following week, and a lot to stay on top of.
Thank you very much for joining us today. Absolutely fascinating discussion. And we'll speak to you this time next week.
Always a pleasure. Thanks for having me, Johnny.